Caleb, are you in a position? Should I share the screen or not? Does it really matter? I can. Can you?
Yeah. Yeah. Share it because okay. I am occasionally glancing at my phone.
Occasion. We'll do it for your occasional glances.
Well, I mean, if yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
If,
we might
if
as well.
I, if it's fine. If it sounds like I should look at the screen, I will then look at the screen. I don't stare at the screen while I'm in on site all the time.
Well, it shows.
You stare at a screen.
I say. Hey.
Hello, friends, and welcome to the Autopod Decepticast, a bi-weekly podcast that delivers an episode-by-episode breakdown of the original G1 series. This is episode number 171, covering episode number 64, which is called Masquerade. Now is the time. This is the place. Listeners, please say hello to the Mr. Pibb and Dr. Thunder to my own Dr. Pepper taste.
I am Ryan. I guess I'll be Mr. Pibb.
Oh, I wanted to be Mr. Pibb.
All right, I'll be Doc Thunder. I didn't go to 8 years of fake Dr. Soda school to be called Mr.
I do like Mr. Pibb.
Here's some facts. Of course, we know Dr. Thunder as the Walmart version of Dr. Pepper, but did you know that Mr. Pibb is the Coca-Cola Company's own knockoff of the popular drink?
No.
It was introduced to the market June 28, 1972 as Peppo, but changed its name to Mr. Pibb after Dr. Pepper sued Coca-Cola for trademark infringement.
Peppo sounds like a child molester clown.
Since June of 2001, the product has been known as Pibb Extra. No E, just an X.
Oh, cause
thank
it's
you very
cool.
much. Got to keep it extreme. And I found a website that tracks Dr. Pepper clones. These are often private label offerings sold at national and regional grocers and drugstores. There were about 50 of them on this website that I found, but here are some of my favorites. There's Dr. Riffic.
Okay.
Which you can find.
I want to be in these pitch meetings.
Which you can find at Eckerd Drugstore. Dr. K, which you can find at Kroger.
Makes sense.
Dr. Perfect.
Oh. Ladies, your mom wants you to marry him.
If you find yourself at a Food Lion, you might find some Dr. Perky.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if Kmart still exists anymore, but if it did, you would be able to find Dr. Rocket.
Damn.
Ooh, that sounds nasty.
Moran Foods Inc.'s knockoff was not very creative. Dr. Pop.
Oh, come on.
It's just called soda, like in a
try
movie.
Harder.
If any of our listeners are in the Springfield, Massachusetts area, you could go to a Big Y store and find yourself a Dr. Radical.
I want to see that commercial where it's like a 90s Spuds McKenzie situation.
A few of these are really upbeat. There's a Dr. Skipper.
Hey, hey.
And a Dr. Cheer. Then there's just the category, kind of like Dr. K, where it's just the name of the establishment. So you've got Dr. Publix. Then there's some that are actually, I don't understand this one, just Dr. Lynn.
Oh.
Just the name of a doctor?
Just a person.
Dr. Wow.
Some of these don't have creative teams.
Dr. Urge.
Oh, no. Do not go to that gynecologist.
I've got to see if I can find a Dr. Urge t-shirt somewhere.
Earlier we had Dr. Radical. If you are in Raleigh, North Carolina, you might find a Dr. Extreme.
Okay.
Dr. Wham.
Just there, surfs to work.
There's one out there that's just called Doctor.
They're like, ah, just leave it blank.
And then I think my absolute favorite one, which you can find in Journey East in Putney, Vermont, is called Dr. Whatever.
I love that. That's amazing.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
Dr. Pepper
oh
knockoffs, everybody. There's many more
awesome.
Where that came from if you're curious
wow.
to look it up.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
The equation is
okay.
The word doctor plus either some sort of Gen X extreme type trope, or the name of the store selling it, or an upbeat emotion, or maybe just the name of a person. You got yourself a drink.
You know, it's funny. This is completely untrue, but it was before, like, the internet and before, I don't know, you could really, I guess, check out things, and I just believed my father. He told me a story once that the way Dr. Pepper was invented was that there was this guy, and he wanted to date this doctor's daughter, and the doctor didn't like him, and so the guy went away, went to college, became a doctor himself, but he was actually, I guess, a chemist and created this soda and then sold it to Coca-Cola and called it Dr. Pepper, and then he married the girl who, because now he was good enough. That's not true at all. None of that is true.
Because Dr. Pepper is not owned by Coca-Cola. That's the first wrinkle that story.
Oh, I thought it was. Maybe I'm just misremembering then.
No, it's definitely not. It's one of the competitors. I'll have to ask my uncle.
Didn't he work for Pepsi?
My uncle worked for Pepsi, and then he became the CEO of Dr. Pepper.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you're not dealing with some chump.
Good work if you can get it.
Yeah.
Our listeners may have noted that Caleb's deep, velvety voice sounds a little bit more, I don't know, tinny.
Yeah.
We've got a special guest this week.
I've decided, well, since we're coming into our end of our second season, I'm literally phoning it in. Just my wife's out of town, and so I have to watch the boys today. So I'm going to be watching them. And they're doing is watching television while I talk to you guys.
All right.
We'll get into APDC news.
Dateline, Transformers. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea. The Autopod Decepticast has news. Let's go to press.
Serious conversations. Since April of 2017, we've provided the world with, I believe, an unbroken cadence of quality Transformers content. That's 4.5 years. Can you believe we've been doing this that long?
I look back sometimes and I'm like, wow, that. And then randomly yesterday on Twitter, one of our tweets from like 2019 got liked and people were liking it again. I'm like, oh wow, yeah. I remember that.
One from 2017 got the couple.
Cup
I think it was 2017.
Oh, was it?
Yeah,
I thought. Yeah. So maybe it was.
So I was looking at that. Did that mean someone liked it and then it made it somehow pulled it up to people's attention again and so it got more likes?
Yeah. Yeah, like
we're not going to pretend to act like I know how the algorithm works.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe when you, that's why I wait a couple of days to like something of ours, because it's shit, like anybody who's in your circle, it'll like, you know how you go through your feed and it'll be like, Caleb liked this. And so you'll see it in your feed if somebody you know likes it, perhaps.
So should we just start liking, guys start liking some of the old stuff again to bring it up?
I have done it, and it didn't do anything to the Rat Bat and Rewind Castlevania one. But Mike Seibert suggests that we do sometimes like or retweet old stuff, yeah.
Maybe in a few years we'll do that to the infamous Pooptimus P tweet.
I don't understand what was that?
Well, if you were paying attention to our text stream with Aaron and you and Mike,
I tiled out.
Yeah, so that's why you don't understand it.
Okay, it's fine. I don't need to.
The conversation it was kind of a continued conversation that Mike had on his podcast with Ant from TFU about how basically the more effort you put into a tweet, the less engagement it seems to get very often. And Mike has been getting gangbuster likes and retweets by just posting artists' art, like basically no effort, and giving credit where credit is due to the artist, but then just reaping in the rewards of public love.
So I went for the lowest comment. I commented, I was like, maybe I should just tweet phrase Pooptimus P and it'll probably blow up.
It did not.
Well, I'm not surprised. No, I'm not, but I was just like, well, screw it, I'm just going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
So I did it, and it got some interesting interest. Robots with Coffee liked it and retweeted it. And then there was a couple of people that commented on it putting someone else's handle to get their attention on it. And I'm like, okay. So
how is this relevant enough for that action?
It went in an interesting direction. So I don't think it was a completely fruitless experiment, but yeah, you just never know. I think artwork does very well, but again, I can't figure this Twitter thing out.
You sound 80 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, we're really burying the lead here.
Yeah, sorry.
I don't even know where how to trip pivot
back. Ready.
Hey, we're taking a little production break. Here's the deal. In the last few months, for me personally, a few things have come up, or maybe possibly been festering is a better way to put it.
Finally broke through to the surface. You couldn't repress it anymore.
That I've got to start managing. Not trying to lean out all the excuses here, but I'll just throw it out there. My mom died suddenly in October. Mm-hmm. And while she wouldn't have wanted a traditional American religious ceremony, I've committed to planning a celebratory gathering to honor her and her hippie dippy pagan lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be trying to get some work in on that. The spring equinox is what I'm targeting.
Oh,
you guys want to go to Eureka Springs in March?
Actually, that might work. That's right around West's birthday, and we've been talking about Eureka Springs.
That's where we
are. Possibly.
In my early planning stages, I was just talking to Melody last night. That's what we're thinking is Eureka Springs, Arkansas. Yeah, I don't really have any idea what I want to do. We've talked about shooting her ashes out of a cannon, Hunter S. Thompson style.
Or like baby reveal. Set the fucking forest on fire.
She'd love that.
But I need a plan for it, and I've done nothing. And then the other piece is just untangling the web of neuroses mm-hmm. that I've woven for myself over the last almost 44 years. So we'll see if I can become less anxious and bitter and scattered and angry and maybe up things like empathy and focus and discipline for myself, my family, my friends.
I love you too. There's a lot of effort that actually goes into these episodes, and you know, that's why we only publish every other week. And you know, it's not going to be a huge break, but
no, I don't think so. But so yeah, break time.
I think on Patreon we said March sometime. So.
Yeah. So for the record, there's no bad vibes going on among the three of us. This isn't the
don't unsubscribe.
This isn't a precursor to an APDC breakup. Sorry, Caleb.
I'm hanging up.
I'm just going to establish a new rhythm for life, and we'll go on a little pause in the meantime, and I'll get some good habits going, and then we'll be back.
I might do some stuff like in between, maybe. I don't know what. Maybe do another best of.
Oof.
don't hurt yourself.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
We're probably going to take a couple months, but the good part is it probably won't feel like a couple months because we're recording right now on the 9th of January,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which means we have content coming out until end of January.
Yeah.
But there probably won't be proper episodes for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks after that. And then somewhere around mid-ish late March probably mm-hmm. is my estimate.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, we only publish every 2 weeks anyway, so it'll feel a little less painful, I think. And I will commit to doing something on Patreon.
I may just get on Twitter and just ask everybody how they're doing. How's it going, everybody?
Do a poll.
Poop to Miss P.
Yeah, I'll contribute too.
In the meantime, we do have to determine our next step, which is, do we go straight to season 3? Do we pause and do something movie-oriented? Greg Tansley reminded me last night about Scramble City, which we have covered, but it would make sense to cover again in between now and season 3.
Yeah, we've had people ask us to revisit the movie again.
If anything, we'd do one episode like that.
Or maybe it splits into two. It's a two-banger that covers the movie, maybe.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know. If we can figure out a good way to approach it, cool.
At least one person has said we should do some G.I. Joe episodes mm-hmm. in between. selfish fuck out there.
Yeah. I think that person also thought that it would be doing me a favor to do G.I. Joe, and I like G.I. Joe, but I'm not a I'm I'm not an enormous G.I. Joe fan, but I do like certain episodes. And if we were to go back to G.I. Joe, I'd love to do that two-part Springfield episode.
Mm-hmm.
But that's about it, really. I mean,
I was thinking, you mentioned Scramble City today. I think that's a good idea. And then maybe a retro, like one or two episode of the movie, and then into season three. And then maybe, I don't know, we could throw something. I don't know. I don't want to go too far afield of what.
Right.
Like, we did the movie, the G.I. Joe movie after the movie, Transformers movie, but.
I don't care to do G.I. Joe at all. I'm just saying.
I wouldn't mind to do a place like Springfield, because it's a shipwreck episode and it has the word Springfield in it.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. It's just super bizarro. But,
it is.
I mean, when we did G.I. Joe the movie, it was fun, but I think a lot of people were like, skipped over that part.
To look at the terrible numbers that we get.
I still have trauma from my failed G.I. Joe.
It wasn't a failure. Somebody won that contest.
That's right. Actually, and our friend Haley won that, and she
won it.
DM'd me the other day saying that she was looking at that print that I sent her for winning the contest of her from the, like, it was her cosplaying as Shockwave on the cover of the number 5 issue of Transformers, the comic book where Transformers are all dead. Yeah. And she was looking at it and she's like, I cut my hair recently and basically it looks like you basically just drew me as Shockwave now and I love it. And I'm like, oh, good. I'm so glad you're still enjoying it.
So that's the current status. I think everybody pretty much clears that up, except for what we do next. We can just make the call. Scramble City will be the next thing we do. How about that? And then a movie retrospective. Will it be one episode? Will it be two episodes? It's not going to be 86 episodes.
No.
I can tell you that much. Was that 86 episodes?
It was more because we did like
the credits.
The credits, and also we did, well, maybe, I don't know. I don't remember. It was like 89, I think, because we did have that clip show in there.
It would have been interesting if it was 86, because 86.
Yeah, we had some bonus episodes, so.
Okay.
But yeah, I know it sucks not to get new content, but it won't be long. It won't feel like long. Don't unsubscribe. And like, we will do special stuff for Patreon.
Look at it this way. Every major podcaster takes breaks.
It's true.
Sometimes they just put stuff out for a few months and you don't hear from them. We're way better than those people.
Yeah. I mean, some of the ones who actually make money take season breaks, but like for 3 months. So let's get there.
If you want us to take season breaks, contribute to our Patreon.
The more money we make, the more
the
breaks
less
we'll take.
We'll do. That's the APDC promise.
Ryan, why don't you whip us up some of that Polyjuice potion so we can live our lives through the body of our enemies? That's a Harry Potter reference for those who didn't know.
I love that author.
You got to separate the art from the artist sometimes. You know, I wish my wife would follow that advice with Michael Jackson.
I would submit the art is not very good.
Oh, well, I don't
like
know.
Her writing.
It's massively popular. What are you going to do?
Sure. If you like it, you like it. I just think it's very, it doesn't matter.
My household is a Harry Potter household.
I've read most of them aloud to Harrison, and then I'm redoing it for Kenneth, my youngest son. When you read it aloud, you really realize that she is not the best writer. Like her sentence structure is all over the place, and it's actually quite hard to read it out loud sometimes. There's a weird cadence.
How does something like that catch on? I guess because you don't need to be good to be popular. Like there's things about it that are original and fun and cool, and especially
it's
to kids.
I think it's a fascinating universe.
Kids aren't picking apart your grammar as much as
no. It's a really cool universe. Don't get me wrong. I was older at that point, but I think it would have been really interesting to be a kid that was that was the character's age when the first books came out, and then matures and grows as the books come out. I think that would have. The books mature as the character gets older too.
Right.
So she's almost she's kind of writing to the age group as she's making these books, which is a really neat concept. So, but that being said, I of course the statements that she's put out is unfortunate, and also she isn't the best writer, but whatever.
I do think the movies are really good though. I mean, I feel like they're very competently made, and I feel like the storyline is good, and I don't have to suffer through the indulgent extra adverbs and adjectives that she might jam into a sentence. And the performances are really good. It's hard to deny that Alan Rickman wasn't fantastic. All of them. They're all fantastic.
Yeah, plus it's really well cast.
I can't remember if it's the third or the fourth one was directed by one of my favorite directors. Director of such fine movies as Children of Men, Alfonso Cuarón. Just get to slip in there. If Ryan was on mic right now, I'm sure he'd have something to say about that.
I'm really bummed that I don't get to try these cocktails, but that's on me.
They are pink. They do look refreshing. They're chilly.
I'm sure
they're
chilled.
Yeah, I had to. So Caleb had to be remote this week, so I had to call an audible on this episode's cocktail because I wanted Caleb to be here to try the one I had planned. So we'll try that when we come back after the break. I have a list of cocktails I want to do on the show, so I just picked a random one. And I'm sure Michael Andrews will come up with a good tie-in name that makes it Transformers-related, but I didn't because fuck him. So, this is the Millionaire. There are confusingly several drinks called Millionaire, but this is one of the few good cocktails to arise during the dark decade of Prohibition here in the States. It is 2 ounces or 60 mils of bourbon whiskey. I used Rittenhouse bottled in bond rye. 3/4 ounce or 22.5 mils of Grand Marnier or triple sec if you don't have that. 2 dashes of absinthe. The traditional recipe calls for 1/4 ounce, but absinthe is so powerful, I backed it off way off. A half ounce of 30 mils of... it can overpower a drink really easily. I did have...
He's gotten up. He's searching the table. He's looking around. Oh, he found it.
In case it wasn't enough, I did bring a little spritz bottle. We can spritz some absinthe in it. 1/2 ounce, 30 mils of grenadine. I recommend using one that has the first ingredient of pomegranate or making your own. 1 egg white. And 1/2 ounce fresh lemon juice. Add all ingredients into a shaker and dry shake, which basically just emulsifies everything and it makes it easier. You basically dry shake things when there's an egg in it. And then add ice and shake again. Double strain into a chilled coupe glass and garnish with grated nutmeg. And you can throw in some bitters if you want. It's not canon, but it's your fucking drink. It's the dealer's choice. Now I have to grate the nutmeg.
Ryan has gotten up and went back to his little table. The sound of fresh nutmeg.
Sounds like mice scratching in the vents.
There's probably some of those. Aaron was amazed to look at my my pyramid of boxes that's in the other side of the basement. I guess he didn't notice it for the past year.
I want to play in it.
The cat plays
in
it.
No, you don't want to play in that. Actually, it's a good thing there's a cat around, or that would be a rat condo.
I haven't had mice in, like, probably 8 years. I had some for a while, but...
I would love it if a little mouse on a motorcycle just drive his way out of that.
Yeah. I did use live traps and transferred them outside, but...
And then they promptly came back in.
Well, I put them out. I took them out to, like, the trail, the Greenways Trail, which is not a great, like, idea. I mean... You know, putting spiders out in the outside is also, they're probably just going to die because they were probably born in here. So I have to just put them down in the basement. So who knows what kind of spider colony is down here.
I guess there's some sort of irony how much you cared about those mice, but now you have a creature here that will murder them if they do show up.
That's true. And that's why she's strictly an indoor cat because we don't want her killing birds. But like I said, we haven't seen any evidence of mice in years, so... All right.
Your cat hides the evidence. Really well.
She wouldn't. She'd leave it out in the open.
Oh no. Yeah.
Right. Oh, okay. I see. What we're cheersing.
It's tart, in a good way.
I love the frothy egg drinks.
There's a little bit. You can still taste the absinthe.
It's very subtle, though.
It looks refreshing.
I wouldn't call it refreshing.
Oh yeah.
Just like thicker.
Yeah. I think you could have this out on a poolside, though. That's my definition of refreshing is, could I have it outside on a hot, sunny day? And I could, this would be good if it, as a blended ice drink or with ice, as
sure.
Well as, I mean, it's in a coupe right now.
You could do that. Mm.
Very good, Ryan.
Thank you. I hadn't tried this one yet.
The Millionaire. The nutmeg. Oh, I love the nutmeg. You can make yourself an eggnog, but if you don't put some of that fresh nutmeg on there, you're just drinking fat.
We've done a couple of eggnog recipes. Like, I think it was last Christmas we did eggnog, maybe.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All I want to do is to thank you, even though I don't know who you are. You reviewed our podcast about those alien robot cars. That's the new thing we're doing.
Oh, oh fuck. Oh, that's the new theme song we put in every time, like Script Deviations or The Real World.
Oh, yeah, we're going to just keep racking them up. Soon this show's just going to be 2 hours of stupid radio DJ sound
effects.
That's
what you wanted in the beginning.
Still what I want.
All I want to do is to thank you, even though I don't know who you are. You reviewed our podcast about those alien robot cars.
That's a new thing we're doing.
Oh, God.
Oh fuck.
Oh, God.
We got ourselves a quote-unquote shout-out from Rogan fan 8888. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs.
What could it be?
I think we might have asked for this, guys. It's finally happened. The headline from this is an Apple podcast review. Keep the politics out of Transformers. And they go on to say, used to love these guys. Then the got political. I think they meant they got political.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure I set this up.
Yeah, well, yeah, because we did say on our last episode, you know, that we made a joke about that, and then it happened, and I'm pretty sure it is also a joke, but it is also a one-star review.
So, I mean, that's a perfect troll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm all in for it.
Right.
I really think it's really funny, and now that the joke has been made, they can remove that one-star review, please.
I don't know. Do you guys have any theories about who this could be?
I don't know if we want to just go wildly theorizing who could have done this.
Only reason I think it's Alpha Magnus is because I know he doesn't give a shit about typos.
Careful.
Wow.
So I think it's Alpha Magnus.
Thank you for helping us with our booty boxes.
Yeah.
Shout out to Alpha Magnus. Everybody's going to get a nice little 3D printed treat in their booty box.
Yep.
All right. Well, you guys don't want to take a shot at this. I'm sorry because I incited this virtual stochastic terrorism on ourselves. Whoever you are, Rogan fan, 8888, thank you for honoring us. And if you want to bump it up to 5 stars now that you've been recognized, feel free. Booty boxes.
Yeah. I will say, yeah, I know it's been a delay. Everything is off getting printed. It should be here in the coming week, and we will be packing everything the 6th or the like 14th of January. So
I should see if smartpress.com wants to sponsor us. We spend enough money with those people. Hey, you know, speaking of shouts out, we have a new patron.
Yeah.
You may recall from our last episode an Apple Podcasts UK review from Captain Alexis, graphic designer, DJ. Well, that son of a bitch gave us money.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gave us more money.
He did. He bumped up to the second tier.
Alexis is a lecturer in graphic communication, of a Volkswagen lover, and a DJ who, when COVID is not ravaging the UK, spins a total 80s night called San Junipero, which is a flawless name.
That's from Black Mirror. That's the only episode that has a happy ending.
That I've seen, anyway. His sets are jammed full of Whitney, Duran Duran, and Prince tracks. I want to attend this. So if we find our way
to the UK?
Yeah. Then we got to go to San Junipero night.
TF Nation, man.
Now, Alexis may be thinking, are these guys going to dox me even more and reveal more of our private conversations?
Here's his address and phone number.
And to that, I answer a little bit. He is a collector of original G1 toys. His first one was Sideswipe. This is amazing to me. He was a lot less short-sighted than me, or I think any of us were. Well, maybe not Caleb. He managed to keep most of his packaging from a kid onward. I think maybe his first couple years of toy collecting, he threw them away. But he says that from 84 to 86, he has nearly that entire lineup, and he has most of the boxes. He's only missing Blur, Springer, and Camshaft. So if any of our listeners want to get rid of those figures, let us know. We'll make a connection here. Favorite character, Starscream. He said it was a piece of oil cake to get into him. And as far as shouts out goes, he'd like us to shout out Triple Takeover.
Oh.
Which I have yet to listen to. But it's 6-0 and Maz and Toy Box Soapbox, who are all kind of big-time Transformers celebrities, so I'm sure it's a good thing.
It is. It's very popular, and I like their graphics. And
Yeah, I've only heard good things from people I trust, including Captain Alexis. So you can find him at Captain Alexis on the socials. He appreciates that we are opening up the world of 80s toys to his wife, Steph. What up, girl? They listened in the car with their daughter, and their daughter then inquired, why do they talk about Transformers and swear so much?
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question.
Yeah, do you have an answer?
Fuck, I don't know.
Yeah.
What else am I going to do? Sit here and watch my penis shrink.
What about the swearing part? Same answer.
The fuck you talking about?
Willis.
What the fuck are you talking about, Willis? R.I.P. Gary Coleman. He also clarified from our last conversation that yurts are all about cocaine and hens, and bothies are about pain and shitting in a tin pan.
Yep. I'm all for that.
Yeah. I like his Twitter because his profile picture, he's in a very nice suit.
You're a sucker for a well-dressed man.
I am. I'm like, hmm.
The one final thing I'll share about our communication is that Alexis called Optimus Prime a cunt.
Yeah. Yes.
So thank you, Alexis, at Captain Alexis on all the things. He did say if you were to find him on Instagram, you're just basically going to see a bunch of family pictures. But if you want to creep on somebody you don't know, go for it.
Hey,
it felt like, he was
about.
Open to it. Last episode recap. Combaticons recorded a hit record with Benny Blanco. Shockwave rode Starscream like a buck in Bronco. Gotta get to Cybertron and save it pronto. Bruticus got reprogrammed by the head honcho. One take. Let's get into costume for The Masquerade, written by Donald F. Glut and animated by Toei. We're kicking things off at Decepticon headquarters. Megatron addresses the Stunticons. Hang on, is this... For a second, I thought the animation was fucked up. Sometimes this video player is bad. By the way, I'm going to have a new computer next time we record.
Ooh.
I'm moving to Apple.
I need a new laptop. The one I have upstairs is about 10 years old, and it parts of the housing are missing and have been replaced with duct tape.
I might have one to sell you that doesn't have any duct tape on it. It's the one you're looking at right now.
Oh, I do. I guess I've been looking into free versions, but like I don't have the ability to put the Photoshop I have on it onto a new computer, I don't think. So
you may not on this one either, but then you can move on to other graphics programs.
There is a free one that is almost exactly similar to Photoshop. I can't remember what it's called, but...
It's called Dr. Photoshop.
Good stuff. Yeah. Except it's spelled with a PPE at the end. But yeah, that's why during the break I'm going to probably try to learn Audacity, because I currently use Adobe Sound Booth to edit, and it's not, if I don't have that, then what the fuck are we going to do? The podcast wants to buy me a software editing system.
We'll put it as a goal.
Okay.
Nah, I'd just rather just hang out and drink your free alcohol.
That's another Patreon level, is buy our booze.
I like that.
I need to chip in and give Ryan some money for
alcohol. Take it.
I should have noted this back when we were talking about booty boxes. We have been shipping, this is our second year of doing booty boxes, and we still haven't met the goal that would actually unlock the booty box.
25 patrons.
So think about how giving we are.
You're welcome.
Everybody.
You're welcome. I will also say a big thank you to everyone who was so effusive about the Christmas Eve poetry reading that I gave, which was wonderful, and you're welcome.
That's the kind of bonus content you should expect during the break.
It has nothing to do with Transformers. It's just me wanting to do a bit. Aaron, did you watch it?
I did.
All right.
You did The Night Before Christmas, and then you did a more obscure rando.
In an old prospector voice. That was fun.
I feel like you moved back and forth a little bit.
Well, you do one take of all that.
I am not a one take kind of guy. We'll start this over. We kick off the party at Decepticon headquarters. Megatron, he's addressing the Stunticons. He needs them to secure the three components that he needs.
He says their unique... Starscream questions this.
He doesn't trust them.
And Megatron says their unique transformation powers make them the perfect choice.
It's really...
And I'm like,
it doesn't make much sense now, and it doesn't make much sense later.
I put in here, I'll reserve my judgment until I see evidence of that. And I thought maybe it's because in their origin story, we see the Stunticon vehicle modes have, quote, automatic force fields
yeah.
that make them super durable, but mm-hmm. no.
Those powers don't seem to show They've up in this
episode. They've just
gone
away. Maybe it's like, you remember, I'm sure they still make them, but like Teflon pants, where like you spill something on and it runs off, mm-hmm. and you wash them like 30 times and it slowly wears off. Maybe they're just old.
Yeah, but maybe that's what it is. They need another spray of whatever that
yeah.
that substance is. I thought it was maybe at the time because they were birthed from Vector Sigma, and maybe that gave them special powers that they didn't have before.
Yeah, man.
I don't know. Yeah. Or that other Decepticons don't have, rather. At this point, after Megatron gives them that mission, the Stunticons then just weirdly introduce themselves.
There's a roll call.
And they salute Megatron at the same time.
You know why? Because every Transformers episode is someone's first Transformers episode.
And then we're off. Drag Strip and Dead End will swipe component one. Breakdown and Wild Rider will get component number two. And the last one is for Motor Master. Roll out, everybody. And not only do they do that introduction in Decepticon headquarters, they also say all their names again.
In the very next scene.
So it definitely feels like an introductory episode, though it's not.
They've been here forever, but yeah.
I liked the Stunticons until the Combaticons came around.
Yeah.
There is one Stunticon I still like. I think it's Wild Rider.
Wild Rider is the one who's crazy.
Oh, maybe it's not.
It's the one who has a red face is Wild Rider.
It's the one who's a little bit more intellectual.
I don't know.
A tiny bit.
Wild Rider is the only other one besides Motor Master whose name I remember and can identify.
he's not the Lambo. Breakdown is the Lambo. We transition to Autobot headquarters. Ratchet is tuning up Ironhide when Teletran 1 picks up Decepticon energy transmission. It's Stunticons.
Here's a fun game. Take a shot every time someone says Stunticons, because you'll already be hammered. The Autobots say it three times in less than a minute.
Wheeljack works to get a fix on them. There's a lot more Stunticons. According to this radar, there's like 12 Stunticons.
I think it's layered improperly. I think that it's just an animation mammer.
I see what you're saying. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 brighter spots.
It looks like they just, I don't know how you would duplicate it like that, but if you squished it together, it would be correct.
I see what you're saying, yeah. Or they just overlaid it improperly.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of that.
You only need one of those layers.
That's what I'm saying. I don't know
they
how it occurs. Maybe somebody did it and then somebody redid it.
Some intern.
There
you're
was
fired.
No bad communication. Yeah.
We are going to transition to the Republic Optics Company. A scientist is peeping through a telescope, using it properly, and sees transforming cars headed his way. We commence the already tired trope of it must be the Autobots. It's not mm-hmm. the Autobots. Breakdown and Wild Rider bust the walls in and steal the corporation's new laser lenses, which mm-hmm. look like an anvil to me.
It kind of does.
They just toss the scientist aside like a rag doll.
It's another one of those cases of invincible humans.
Yeah.
His neck is broken. It does look like an anvil.
That would be a good TFCon bit, invincible humans.
Yeah.
Just a super cut of all of the humans that should be dead.
That's going to be a lot of work.
Spike's going to be a big feature in a lot of that. We pretty much did a similar thing with Daniel.
Yeah, we did. I think it's a update to that story. We could
For real.
We could tie it off with that exact mm-hmm. set of imagery. Hey, I like reusing old shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Got to get the payback on it. We now find ourselves at a U.S. Army facility. There's an experimental generator there.
The guards' rifles make G.I. Joe laser sounds, which is cool.
Yeah. Drag Strip and Dead End bust in. Dead End is the one I think I like.
Okay. Drag Strip is the one with six wheels.
Yes. They bust in the base and just take the damn generator with basically zero resistance. Fast forward to a city museum.
It was just another issue of, like, why is it layered like that? Like, it's just a static draw. No, go forward. It's at the city museum. It's just a static drawing, but it's like they erased it and rewrote over it. City Museum is duplicated on the building. I don't know what's going on at Toei.
Yeah, there it is.
I wonder if it is just part of the original sketch.
That's like what I'm thinking, because you do see like lines where they like guidelines for how tall the letters should be. What the fuck?
Yeah. So they probably painted the building. It could be a reuse of another building for all we know, and then painted those lines on top of it to try and do the typography. But I guess whoever did the final artwork really didn't like the, kerning or something.
So they didn't like it looks like the spacing might have been off on some of it. And so
they tried to fix it.
Yeah.
But they didn't fix the guidelines. It's rough. We have a village person and Peter Griffin guarding the world's most perfect ruby. Look at these guys.
They're, That's your Peter Griffin?
Yeah, it's as good as I got.
It's not bad.
Hey, it's no Alf, Willie. That wasn't even a good Alf.
All the bits.
Try that again later. All in all, these are pretty clean incidents. Hit and run. First guy probably should have died. He didn't. Stunticons have accomplished their mission.
Yeah, so they've stolen laser lenses, an experimental generator, and the world's largest, most perfect ruby. I will say now, I did not see their unique transformation powers
and how that's helpful.
In evidence in any way that none of, like, the Seekers could have done this.
Yeah. Unless you were to make an argument that it's helpful that people think they're Autobots for a second.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's really the case. They should, and I don't even think that was the point. Otherwise, you would have had people at the army base been like, it's Autobots, let them through.
Right. Yeah.
It's Autobots. Give them free admission to the museum.
Come on in.
I think maybe they meant like not necessarily their transformation powers, but that they're just their overall characteristics of being stunt drivers, so that they're just really good at zooming in somewhere and getting something and then zooming out.
They do break through walls a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So their just particular ability as opposed to their transformation powers. They should have said it differently.
Caleb, IMO. You have given them the benefit of the doubt, and I like that about you.
In a major way.
Where are we? Autobot base. That's where we are. T1. Teletran 1. I don't even understand my own notes. Teletran 1 located the stunties, and the Autobots are going to go get them.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of transformation in this episode. Not good transformation. Like, the animation isn't very good, but it almost is an entry point for the Transformers. Like, you don't have to know anything about these guys, which is weird for the penultimate season 2 episode.
Yeah.
The animation in this is overall bad, particularly the Stunticons. There's lots of coloring errors and bad illustration. TF Wiki suggests that the Stunticons and Minosaur's transformation models were never fully developed and given to the animators, because they kind of do just morph into their car modes and into Minosaur.
And there's constant shifting between, is Minosaur's limbs, his arms, are his arms just cars with a break in between them for an elbow, or are they arms with cars on
attached,
the side?
Yeah. And there is one scene where Minosaur's legs are just Motormaster's legs.
Good stuff all around.
Toei's like, we're working on a movie.
What do we got? Moldmates, Grapple, Inferno, and then we've also got Hoist, Bumblebee, Spike, Blaster. Kind of a weak crew to send out on this mission.
It's
also
weird at this point to be using so many G1 Season 1 characters, but I don't mind, but it's straight.
Well, in this little rollout scene, it's only Bumblebee.
I guess you're right.
That is an OG.
Weirdly, our next one
is Bozos are going along. None of these guys can fight.
Speaking of Ratchet, did you notice his voice?
It's a Wally Burr thing.
Yeah, it's Wally Burr.
You did the research as well.
You're just fine as is, Ironhide.
How do I look, Ratchet? Your own designer wouldn't know you, Windcharger.
Yeah, Ratchet, it sucks because I think this is the last time we see Ratchet. This is how he goes out with this busted-ass voice.
Yeah.
No, R.I.P. Wally Burr, but...
Is he not in the next one? No, maybe not.
I don't think he is.
I think he is because I think I remember... Maybe. We'll see. You know what? Stay tuned.
He doesn't talk in the movie. He just dies.
Yes.
Why are you laughing? God, so mean.
It's a nervous laughter.
Inferno, Hoist, and Grapple intersect with Wild Rider and Breakdown. There's a game of chicken. There's an engagement, some missiles, some oil slick fire. The Autobots actually knock the Stunticons out of commission, and I don't see how that's possible, but here we are.
Yeah, was Trailbreaker not season one?
Trailbreaker is season one.
Okay, so
but that's not Trailbreaker though.
I meant Grapple. Voice
or Grapple is season two.
Okay, okay, why is Breakdown leaking oil out of his tailpipe for no apparent reason?
I know. I thought it was an oil slick.
That's what I thought it was going to be.
But that never plays out.
But yeah, he's just driving along. Well, it's not out of his tailpipe. It's just out of his chassis. And then Hoist lights it on fire, the trail. So it catches.
But then it's like they feel bad about it.
Yeah, because then Inferno goes and puts him out. And I'm like, aren't you in a war?
Yeah, it's confusing.
That'd be like if an American soldier approached a Nazi bunker on D-Day and then lit it aflame with his flamethrower, but then felt bad about it, so they called a fire truck and put it out.
Man, those flamethrower guys were huge targets. And also, what a horrible job to be igniting yeah. human beings.
Yeah.
But also, pretty cool.
No, it is not cool.
No.
Oh, Lord.
I mean, you're lighting up a bunker, son.
Sounds a choice.
Fire.
No PTSD there. They did start it.
That just made me realize there is a G.I. Joe character that has a flamethrower, right?
Probably.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't
anyway,
there be?
And I think much less of that person now.
Hoist shoots, I guess it's, which one is it?
Is it?
I can't remember all these fucking... You can't expect me to remember all these combiner names. I think you're right.
In preparation for this idea.
No, that's Wild Rider.
Oh, he shoots Wild Rider, yeah.
Yeah, he manages to Hoist, the nobody, the loser, the schmuck.
He made a tower, a solar tower.
But with Grapple.
Yeah.
He was just Grapple's lackey.
That's true.
He got nothing.
They're like, let's give him something to do right at the end of this season.
Like I said, there's no way that these three losers would take out these Stunticons.
This is a thing, and we'll get to it just in a second, but like the Autobots are super capable in a way we've never seen before in this episode, at the beginning, I'll say.
Dead End and Dragstrip, they're headed to the rendezvous point. They're driving over a beach for some reason. Dragstrip says, better go faster, Dead End, or I'll beat you to the rendezvous point. And Dead End says, I don't give a fuck.
I do not fucking care. Beat me then. What are you talking about? I'm not playing your game.
They end up engaging with Trax and Warpath, whom we did not know was a part of the attack squad. Blam! Mm. The Autobots manage to take down the Stunticons, particularly Warpath, who punches through Dead End's bonnet.
Straight through the top. You've made me forget the American word for roof. Now, okay, so in just a second, we'll see Trax, and I think it's meant to be his voice, where he says, guess it's up to me now. But it doesn't sound like the voice actor. It doesn't sound like Michael McConaughey? You want to just capture
or Chain? It? I don't know. Which...
Guess it's all up to me now.
That.
Yeah, it feels like he was either drunk or it's somebody else.
It doesn't sound like Trax at all. And I thought maybe it was Wally Burr, but I looked it up and I can't find any information on it. Because it's his only line in the show.
Typically, if another actor, I'm not saying it's flawless, but if another actor voices a character they don't typically do, it still gets credited in TFWiki. Like if it was Michael Chain or whoever that does Trax, it would say, and what this person in this episode.
It's Michael McConaughey.
Okay. They should have got Greg Tansley.
Yep. He was, what, 8?
I guess it's up to me now.
It's perfect. Crikey.
I'm young Greg Tansley.
Me balls haven't dropped.
There they go.
That's a new bit. We're doing a new bit. It's young Greg Tansley, and we're going to brutalize, like, is he speaking an Uplands accent, or is this Australian? What's going on here?
Or is it some sort of British thing, because we don't know what we're doing?
I'm Greg Tansley.
Oh, to be...
Hello, Governor. I'm Greg Tansley. Top of the morning to you.
It's me, Greg Tansley, from Liverpool.
They swoop you like a dickhead.
He was raised... young Greg Tansley raised by plovers.
God damn. To be the token foreigner making repeated appearances on American podcasts. This is what you get. Thanks, Greg.
We're terrible people.
Let's see. I don't even know.
So Trax and Warpath capture them pretty easily.
I do like that they respect that Trax flies.
He's like a flying car.
You don't even fly, Jet.
Oh yeah, and Trax uses his I can't remember if it's called what it is, but it's the gun that fires darkness, basically. Right.
And then Warpath, boosh.
So he's
At least this makes sense. These guys are brawlers.
Yeah, especially Warpath. He's a tank.
Then we've got a very iconic scene indeed.
Mm-hmm. This is the only scene I remember because I don't remember this episode at all except for what we're about to watch.
I think I know what your iconic moment is.
Do you?
Motormaster and Optimus Prime play chicken head to head. Motormaster's been waiting for this a long time. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. That's like 2 weeks. You're just born. But he presses the gas. Prime presses the gas. They're close. They're closer. Boom! We go to commercial.
Yeah. It's up in the air who wins, and then you have to watch 3 minutes of commercials, and then we come back and find out.
Who do you think won?
Bumblebee.
What about Blaster?
Yeah, I didn't know why Blaster was here, because he's in tape deck mode, and Spike's just carrying him around. He comes into play in just a second, but it was like, what is going on? He's not even playing music or anything.
Sometimes maybe he just likes to be...
Held?
Carried around, yeah.
I'd like to be carried around like a baby. Like, put a nappy on me and...
A nappy?
Yeah. And then
wipe your butt. Wipe your bottom.
Change me and maybe, you know, kiss my cheek.
You want some...
jerking me off. Well, that's at the end. Yeah, when you're changing my diaper, you just give me a little...
Tuggy-wuggy?
Sucky-sucky.
He wants to... I'll tell you what, if you want, we can start building you like an adult-sized crib.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Give you a little suckle.
A little suckle. You can buy those things where a man can put on like fake breasts and feed the baby out of them. If you do that, Caleb, we can work it out.
Oh, my God. All right.
It's a plan.
Except it's gin inside of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the idea of an adult-sized crib that Ryan could costume up in. But then we also build just this, it's surreal, like this giant human breast that from the ceiling. It's just giant.
Like that Woody Allen movie?
I don't even know. I don't know Woody Allen movies. I'm not a pedophile. But it just like comes down from the ceiling and like the nipple just gets down to like right to the top of the crib. And so can you picture that?
Are we monetizing this or is this
I don't even know what it's made from. Like, okay. I don't even know how you make this.
It's a
thing.
Garbage bag.
Oh, no. You need it to be smooth.
If you put something in it, it'll be smooth.
You got to pull it off somehow.
What kind of sandpaper garbage bags are you using?
It could be paper mache, I guess, but you got to really smooth it.
I would say use like some kind of bag, some kind of plastic bag, and fill it with like foam insulation, the kind you spray in and it hardens.
We'll build it out of an old Stretch Armstrong.
Oh.
You guys never... Okay, never mind.
I know what a Stretch Armstrong is. I'm just having trouble figuring out
how it would work. How the logistics...
Have you ever? There's a thing you can watch video. It's a Zoomer thing.
Oh.
They take Stretch Armstrongs and they fill them as full as possible, and they get enormous. They get they get huge.
That might be perfect.
So there
then.
You go.
I can picture this.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Going. Have Brocells send us the link.
I'm trying to figure out what I'm upset about here.
Just upset in general.
We're back from the break.
Oh, God.
There's fire. There's smoke. There's no radio response. But among the flames, we see Optimus Prime, triumphant, and Motormaster is a molten mess.
Spike just throws Blaster, and he transforms. Like, I don't know. That was just weird to me. And so, yeah, there's no radio. Blaster is the one who's like, he's here now for communications. But, yeah, Prime beat Motormaster to a fucking pulp. And but he's still a little rattled himself.
He doesn't visually look rattled, but he indicates that he doesn't want to do this again.
Mm-hmm.
Blaster added no value. I mean, he said the radio.
Well, he does in a second. He's blocking the Stunticon's radios.
Oh,
But yeah, it is pretty cool. Like, this face-off was pretty cool, and I'm surprised it took so long to come up. Like, it probably should have been in the first introduction episode of the Stunticons, Prime versus Motormaster.
Why?
Because it's just so obvious.
Maybe you got to build up to that kind
of. And there's a reason, like, everybody remembers it.
Well, if it happened immediately, we wouldn't be waiting a long time for this.
That's true. That one line wouldn't be there.
As Ryan said, Blaster is blocking the communication waves, so the Stunticons can't talk to the Decepticons about their situation. The Autobots are dragging the Stunticons back to Autobot headquarters. They're jailed up.
Apparently the Autobots have an entrance into Jesus Christ's cave.
Wow, biblical reference.
Well, they move a huge... We've never seen this entrance into the Ark before, but they... And it's not even clear if it's the Ark. It might just be a sub...
I've never heard anybody refer to his tomb as Jesus Christ's cave.
I mean, yeah, well, I guess tomb is better, but they just move a huge rock and go into a cave, which it's just made me think of that. Reverse.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Good
stuff. But then when they removed the boulder, the Stunticons were gone. They
That's
had arisen.
Right. There was just their tattered shroud. it's not necessarily clear that this is even the Ark. It might just be an outbuilding. It might just be a jail.
That'd be interesting that the Autobots can, like, built an old Wild West jail in the middle of the desert. This is the point where I wrote, can we not pretend that Ratchet's replacement voice isn't jarring?
It is very different. Yeah. It's very weird.
So the Stunticons are jailed up. They're prevented from forming Menasor because they're jailed up individually.
Mm-hmm.
But what's up with their heists? It's so confusing, these objects that they have. Though the Stunticon mines have been scanned, the only info we can parse is their rendezvous point, which is a magnificent meteorite crater. But we still just don't know what's up with the booty. Is it a part of a new Decepticon secret weapon? As to what kind of weapon, why it would be improper to even guess.
So this is interesting, too, because there are a ton of characters in here, and a lot of them get something to do, and a lot of them are season one characters. Like, how long has it been since we saw Hound?
Yeah.
Let alone heard him speak or use hologram powers. And then speaking of which, I was wondering at this point, we'll see in a little bit, but why Hound doesn't just use that to cloak the Autobots instead of the magic spray paint we get in a second.
Yeah, there's a... have you done more research on that?
I have figured out why, yes.
Okay.
But it still seems nebulous at best.
The Autobots pull up Fox News to hear an interview with the R&D guy who should be dead from Republic Optics Company. You recall, he thought these were the Autobots at first, and that statement inspires the next move of the Autobots. And I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth here because I was talking shit about the Stunticons are Autobots trope from earlier, or mistaking the Stunticons as Autobots trope. But Spike's tone here, he says the Stunticons are mistaken as Autobots. Like, he says it like it's so out of the realm of possibility mm-hmm. that it's crazy.
And I guess it does kind of make sense because then they're like, well, let's do that in reverse.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess it works. It just could have been, I think, in a rare move, they were a little too subtle about making the Stunticons confused for Autobots.
Yeah. In this one instance, they should have, like, said that a few more times.
Yeah. And then we'd probably complain about that.
Right.
That guy's bow tie is enormous.
And floppy.
I have one that's about that big. Or maybe he's just small. Look at this ridiculousness. It is impossible being a short man to get a tie that is reasonable to, like in a modern tie that I don't have to tie in a ridiculous way and then tuck the tail end into my pants.
Well, Ryan, I believe you've identified a consumer problem. I think the opportunity is incumbent upon us to develop short ties for short men.
There is like, some companies that exist. They are expensive. But like, I've got like 6 inches of the tail of this tie sticking out.
You're obviously not the first small person to wear a tie. There's not an option, like there's not like just a readily available option to buy a shorter tie.
Not, I wouldn't say readily available. There are companies online you can do it, but again, they're a little more expensive than regular ties. I think just because the demand isn't there. But like that's why I have. in addition to the fact I like the patterns and stuff, that's one of the good reasons I like 60s and 70s and 50s ties, because they're they're shorter.
Huh. Okay. A lot shorter. Interesting. That's fascinating.
I hope so.
Well, it is interesting. It's weird that they
I complain ties about
have been
this
getting
all the
longer.
Time.
Huh. Okay, now the opportunity is defined even further. Little ties for little people on a little budget.
There you go, Ron.
All right. I'll do that with the capital I don't have and expertise I don't possess.
I'll provide the capital. Mm-hmm. We'll make it a worker co-op.
We'll take old ties that people don't want anymore.
We'll just cut the bottom.
Yeah, you just slice it off and send it out. I probably actually, now that I think about it, could just cut it and hem it, but I have a lot of ties.
Maybe for Christmas I'll commission somebody to do that for you.
And then it's like comically short, like Abbott and Costello comes to my nipples.
A short time passes, and the Autobots in that time construct a camouflage paint factory in their headquarters.
And Mirage is here, and we'll see that comes into play. So
this magic factory coats some of the Autobots in a substance that makes...
So yeah, they do breakdown, or Sideswipe is breakdown, Jazz is dead end, Windcharger is Wild Rider, and Mirage is Dragstrip.
Right.
And obviously Prime is Motormaster.
Correct. But Windcharger doesn't get the paint treatment.
No, he gets like a ray that, because...
It's like a holographic treatment.
Yeah, because the conceit here is that those characters, aside from Windcharger, are kind of, they're similar vehicles.
Right. Jazz and Dead End are both Porsches, though Jazz is a 935 Turbo and Dead End is a 928. Sideswipe and Breakdown make the most sense because they're both Lamborghini Countaches. Dragstrip is a Tyrell P34 six-wheeler race car, while Mirage is a, am I pronouncing this right, Ligier JS11.
Sure.
They're both Formula Ones.
Yep.
And then Optimus Prime are very different tractor trailers. Prime is a white.
Both semis is essentially
is a Freightliner, and Motormaster is a Kenworth K100 Aerodyne Sleeper.
Very cool looking truck.
But I guess Windcharger is so different that they're like, you have to have hologram.
Yeah, we'll
see.
He's
a Pontiac Firebird Trans Am, and Wild Rider is a Ferrari 308 GT Bizzle.
They had to do something because he becomes very important.
Yeah.
I guess they planned for that. I'm just thinking of this now. We'll get to it, but
yeah.
They must have planned for that contingent.
This is actually kind of smart, this whole
idea. Except, okay, so what they're going to do, did you have what they're going to do? Did we already talk about it?
They are in costume for a reason. It's a masquerade.
That's true.
It's not an Eyes Wide Shut party, I'll tell you that.
So it's not completely idiotic later, I guess, but their plan is to take the parts to Megatron and find out what his plan is.
Right.
Why?
Why not just keep the parts?
Or here's an idea. Make all the parts fake and give the parts that don't belong to you, that people are missing, back to the people who own them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not what they do.
A lot less risk in that.
Exactly.
In that idea.
Because their plan is super risky, and we'll get there. We'll get there.
So it's time to go. Here are the rules. Everyone shut the fuck up. Radio silence. Don't follow us or our mission is fucked. Autobot Stunticons, roll out. They're the same height, though, for some reason. Height
is not a word.
Height-tha?
That's not a word.
Right. Yeah. I believe you.
Caleb brought this up a couple months ago.
Yeah. I didn't realize it. I've been trying to correct myself since then.
Now we got to go back into every episode and change it.
which is crazy, because my job used to be hanging artworks. I was dealing with length and width and height all the time.
I mean, it makes sense for it to be height.
Yeah. So no one ever corrected me, which I'm shocked, actually. That
actually,
they just talked about you behind your back.
Maybe that was it.
Did you see what did you hear what that fuck said? He said height. Well, what a dummy.
That was your nickname.
Art installers are, no surprise, they're normally hipster folk, and I'm surprised that none of them did, like, try to correct me, but I obviously...
It's a pretty subtle difference. Like, I don't know, if you're not listening for it, you would hear the difference, necessarily.
Did they just listen to the Lumineers all day while setting up displays?
Right, doing this. They doing a lot of, the younger ones doing all that stomp, clap, hey stuff all the time.
Exactly.
Lost on me.
You're not missing out anything, okay. Right?
Autobot team is rolling through the mountains and valleys on their way to the crater. They're joined by Laserbeak, who seems fooled by their Stunticon disguises. The real trick, though, will be fooling Megatron.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the crater. Constructicons are building something scary-looking as the Autobot Stunticons make their way to the bottom of the crater. Starscream is suspicious of their law-abiding driving.
He's
suspicious of the real Stunticons and the fake Stunticons.
Yeah, like...
He hates Stunticons.
Maybe that's just it, but, like, he catches on instantly and is like, something's not right. They're driving too carefully. And is, like, teasing Megatron about not realizing... He seems to just know they're Autobots.
Megatron, though, he the components have been delivered. He's fine.
Starscream seems to know the whole time.
Yeah,
that they're not, but it's weird. He's just like waiting for the reveal so he can rub it in Megatron's face.
We have to remember he was recently just like beaten within an inch of his life, so he's,
it's true,
towing the line a little bit, maybe, for being generous.
And then there's an impression of Motormaster, I guess. I think it's just his voice. I think it's just his regular voice. But then Starscream's like, "What's wrong with your voice?"
Right.
Yeah, I couldn't tell the difference between his normal voice and the interpreted voice. Like,
there's not really.
Yeah, it's the same. Here, let's play it.
Have your Stunticons brought all the components, Modern Master? Hey, would I let you down?
Yeah. Something wrong with your vocalizer, Modern Master? You sound strained.
Too much to sound, I guess.
I don't know. If I'm Prime and I'm doing impressions, that's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I think it would have been funnier if it was child Greg Tansley. What are you talking about?
From inside the jail cells at Autobot headquarters, the real Stunticons are bumming. How can they get out? They can't use their radios and they're stuck behind bars? Well, Breakdown vibrates hard enough to short
like
out
a Sibian.
His entry. Whoa, hey. Do any of our listeners use a Sibian?
Let us know. I don't know why, but...
Send us video.
This cell seems pretty easy to break out of.
Yeah, it wasn't really that hard.
He just vibrates and flies through the bars.
Yep. And then he assassinates Inferno and Hoist.
Mm-hmm.
And who else? Because I wrote...
I think it was Ratchet, was it?
Oh, Inferno, Grapple, and Hoist. He just murders them. And then he lets his buddies out.
Yeah.
And now it's time for Menosaurus Rex. Menosaur kills everyone else in the Autobot headquarters. Wheeljack, Hound, Ratchet, Ironhide. Bye.
I mean, speaking of cells, this scene we're about to see is layered really weird. It's whenever Ratchet and Ironhide and all of the... Yeah, go back.
Oh, my God. Ironhide is a giant.
Yeah, Ironhide is either enormous or Ratchet should be behind him. Because he looks the size of Bumblebee.
Ratchet is a little boy.
It's really obvious, too.
But if Ratchet were behind them, he'd have to be about 15 feet behind them.
Yeah,
you wouldn't see him at all.
Way in the background. You'd see his head, like kind of how in porn they shoot it so you can see the woman's head like through the legs. And
these guys should have taken a cue.
I don't like
from Vivid.
I will say, any porn directors out there, let's get some more face in there. I don't like the under the balls into the vagina. Why? That's not interesting.
Yeah. Luckily, I think
just close up on the genitals.
Since the 70s, I think they've moved away from that for
There's
the most
a lot
part.
In the 90s.
I think that, and maybe so, yeah. But I mean, I think contemporarily, they'll show that. They'll get that shot. I think it's a shot you got to get, but they won't edit it in for so long.
Maybe.
You're not talking about 10 minutes of ball slapping.
Yeah.
I'd like to see they mount a camera to the head of the guy's dick.
They do that. Those videos are out there.
They do?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That feels uncomfortable for the lady.
Oh, no.
And the man, possibly.
Yeah, you can see, like, interior cum shots.
No.
Mm-hmm.
I was just joking. I regret it.
I don't watch them, but they exist.
Of course they do. Why do they even? Okay.
If it's been thought of, it probably exists. Like if you can
what
think
is that
of
called?
It,
Rule 37 or
yes,
something?
Rule 37.
Caleb, you just willed it into existence. If it hadn't, it now will.
You right. retroactively created it with your mind, because time is an illusion.
Interesting.
Let's get some more face and boobs in there, is what I'm saying.
Right. Minasaur, as we said, kills everybody, and then he punches a hole in the side of the mountain and takes his leave.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody be punching holes.
The special powers Minasaur seems to display in this episode are cannons under his arms.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit later.
Yeah, they
sound
talk about it.
Soundwave says, use his special powers.
That was a flawless Soundwave.
Oh, we went to commercial, and then we're going to come back from commercial. Minasaur is soaring towards that crater. Back at Autobot headquarters, Bumblebee and Spike discover the mutilated corpses of their fallen comrades. Nah, they're all still alive. We're at the crater. The weapon is complete. Constructicons, you are dismissed.
Get on out of here. They fly away. The three Constructicons fly away.
What is the weapon? Well, I'll let Megatron tell it.
The weapon is complete, and the Autobots are totally unaware of its very existence.
Are they indeed?
Say, boss, what's that weapon gonna do anyway?
What? You've forgotten already? Memory banks must have got jumbled. Too many head-on collisions. Utilizing that ruby's light, focused through those perfect lenses, it will fire the most destructive ray of all. More powerful than any laser, it will create a chain reaction in whatever it touches, producing instantaneous destruction. Imagine my turning that ray on the Autobot's headquarters. Perhaps when it's gone, someone will put up a memorial parking lot.
This is the, not to spoil next week, I just realized this is the first of two episodes in a row where he has a magic
laser
gun thing.
There's a real problem.
Did you guys know that rubies emit light?
Do they?
No.
Oh, but no, but I don't think he's saying emits light. He's focused, because like, oh, maybe he did, but like you use, you know, like crystal, you can use crystals and lasers and stuff like that. I'm
what,
pretty
just
sure.
To get the chakras in alignment or whatever?
No. Like, it does. I'm not crazy. This is real. Anyway, that's not the problem I had.
What's your problem?
Well, fucking, it's a laser at mm-hmm. the bottom of a canyon.
Mm-hmm.
Lasers can only fire straight in one direction. Mm-hmm. It's not like an artillery shell. You have an immobile cannon you can't do anything with unless they, like, people are flying into that canyon.
I guess I assume that they'd move it.
Well, it sure doesn't look portable. It's enormous.
They should have kept the Constructicons around to be the stage crew or whatever, like disassemble, reassemble.
Yeah, like I get maybe building it in a secret, but like it just doesn't look like you could move that very easily. And I think the conceit is just that they don't care. Like the writers don't care that
nobody
that
cares.
Lasers can't
no.
fire.
I don't care anymore.
It annoyed the shit out of me.
I'm kind of at this point with the season, I'm like kind of exhausted over the dumb ideas.
The weapon, like the different like plots.
Yeah.
Just as the Autobots are about to act on Megatron's plan, Minasaur arrives. Is he the real Stunticons? Is he?
It is interesting that the Autobots stay in vehicle mode this whole time.
I found an interesting note on that I'll cover
okay.
a little bit later. Theory. I don't know if it's a fan theory or what, but just Starscream knew something was up this whole time. He pulls out his null ray pistol to apprehend the Fugazis. The true test, can these uncoupled coops form Menasor?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out they can with the help of Windcharger's magnetic powers.
Yep. And that's why he had to be a part of the team.
So weird that they, like, did one of them, like, kind of, like, force a giant missile head, like.
That's Mirage. Mirage displays that head.
Got it.
They say
Got
that,
it.
And Windcharger says, as long as my magnetic powers hold out, I can keep us together. And then it's like, blink and you'll miss it, but Mirage says, and I can keep, as long as I can keep this head projection.
Which, by the way, that's not Mirage's special ability.
I have some of that in script deviation.
That's a hound ability.
Yeah, I have some of that.
I have an easy solution is, like, which one can fly? Like, okay, why don't you both fly?
That's true.
In reality, there should be no head on Menasor if Mirage is using his special powers, because he would just make it invisible.
Yeah, again, we'll cover that in script deviations.
He should have just made them entirely invisible and they run away.
They should have just never come here.
No, it was all bad. It was all terrible.
The Decepticons remain confused. The Menasors do battle. Megatron takes control of his ruby-powered cannon thing. He's going to take out whichever Menasor loses.
And I understand, I'm sorry, to go back for just one second, like I said, we'll cover it a little bit in script deviations, but I don't understand if you're going to use Windcharger and he's off model, why not just make Hound instead of Mirage part of the team?
And make Hound?
Because Hound's the one who does holograms.
Right.
You know, it's not as stupid, because it is explained by some things that's not obvious in the show, but it's confusing in the show.
But this Menasor, the Autobot Menasor, should have one T-Rex arm.
Yeah, and I guess they're projecting hands as well.
Yes. It's all fun. With a swift sword swipe, the real Menasor breaks apart the Autobot KO version, which I don't know if they decide to reveal themselves or that causes them to lose whatever concentration or the paint falls off of that, whatever. The Autobots are now revealed their true form in that process.
It's just a story conceit. It's just like, let's just take
gotta
it
wrap
off,
it up.
Take it off of them now.
Megatron aims the cannon and fires and misses. There is power in the cannon, but it's unstable. Megatron ignores the warnings of his minions and the cannon explodes. The fireball blasts Megatron, Starscream, and Soundwave to the ground. He commands Menasor to destroy the Autobots, for they are only five.
It is cool in the Autobots firing at Menasor, we get to see Mirage and I think it's Sideswipe fire their shoulder cannons, like their shoulder rockets. We almost never see that.
Just then, the Autobot reinforcements arrive. We've got Ironhide, B, Huffer, Wheel to the Jack, Blowy McBlowerson, Ratchet, and Spike.
Mm-hmm.
Too many Autobots for Menasor to take on, so the Stundicons peace out, Starscream and Soundwave make like a tree, and finally, in utter embarrassment, Megatron retreats.
I don't think I've ever seen Soundwave transform and fly away in tape deck
that
mode.
That is a gif that if we don't take advantage of, we are stupid.
I will say the cannon's a pretty cool-looking weapon, so yeah, it overloads, it explodes. Prime seems to have known that it was going to happen.
Why would he know that?
Well, this... okay, go ahead.
I just want to see Soundwave transform and fling himself into the air. Watch this, Caleb. You'll love it.
So weird.
This is weirder.
It's like, why?
They also just abandon... Like, Megatron doesn't order them to retreat. They just take off.
I feel like his control over this group is pretty
tenuous,
pretty loose at this point. It's time for the episode ending quip session. Turns out Ironhide made some alterations to the ruby that made it unstable. Why Ironhide? Has he ever been an engineer or scientist? I don't know.
I guess it works from a storytelling standpoint, but Prime really buried the lead with saying they made alterations to the ruby. If it was revealed earlier, it would take a lot of the stakes out of the story. But I would also posit that fucking ruby, not to mention the generator and laser lenses, don't fucking belong to you.
Yeah. Just make a fake.
Yeah. It's also, here's the real weakness. For a while, that cannon worked.
The ruby did the job. The Decepticons were so busy trying to expose us, they never thought to examine the ruby.
Like,
he's thumb scratching his faceplate.
Yeah.
Thinking.
They weren't that busy trying to expose you.
No. Nope.
Also, just what did you do to that ruby? Hey, we're at the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. So, Caleb, you said before we start recording that you had a story about your younger son.
Yeah. Kenny asked for an Alexa the other night. And I was like, well, no, I don't want to get you an Alexa yet. Harrison has an Alexa, and he goes, why don't you want me to have an Alexa? And I was like, well, you have a lot of technology going on right now as it is. And I just want to wait a little while. And he goes, well,
his response to that was, well, I think technology is good to have. And I was like, okay, why? And he says, well, the sun is getting bigger and someday it's going to envelop the earth. So technology will be good to help us get off this planet and go to Mars. And I was like, okay, you can have an Alexa. I had no response to that. So
you gotta go farther than Mars, baby.
He made his case. Yes, Ryan. Thanks for I start like saying no. That's your plan's not.
No, I wasn't saying
work.
That. I was obsessed with the idea that the sun was going to destroy the Earth as a child.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, it will someday, but you were like, were you thinking that it was going to like happen right away, or what was your mindset?
No,
I
knew it would be like in like 4 or 5 billion years, but I was just like,
right,
well, that's a bummer.
It's a hard one to wrap your head around, but. In my mind, but my son doesn't seem to, it's not slowing him down from asking for an Alexa. That's for sure.
It's almost like he's like, I need an Alexa so I can enjoy it before we all die.
No, his whole deal was like, technology is good and here's why. And then, so he's like, there shouldn't be an issue with me getting technology because I'm the future, you know, and, he's just making a case for technology in general.
Right. Yeah. Now I've come around to the way of thinking of like maybe humanity shouldn't survive. I don't know if we're a net gain for the galaxy.
We'll see where we are in 5 billion years.
I'd like to give it a shot. I'd like to give it a shot. But
there is that depressing idea that the reason we haven't had contact with other species is that once you get to this level, we eradicate ourselves.
Yeah, the great filter. Yeah, I think in my mind, looking at the pattern of life here, that there's just a very, very small percentage that make it through. And
the galaxy's so big. Although, yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of soft UFO, reveals lately, and it is pretty compelling video, like that's been released from the Navy and stuff. I don't know.
And also,
it doesn't mean it's aliens, but.
Right. There's so many galaxies. Who's to say that just because maybe we're the only intelligent life in the galaxy, but that still is very limited as far as how many galaxies there are.
It would seem almost impossible. Even in our own galaxy, there isn't another intelligent species. And there are millions and billions of years of like time between stars' lifespan. So.
Yeah, it's very possible and probable, I think, that there have been, like stars that have come and gone where civilizations, like habitable planets have come about and have just been destroyed in the manner that ours will someday be destroyed. That cycle's already happened.
And, it's pretty obvious that Mars probably supported life at one point, and it just was too far away and too small, and it just never got... to complex life.
Right.
There was also, I can't remember what it was called, if life were to evolve to the ability to be interplanetary or even intra or intergalactic, that it would have to be malevolent because of the need for resources to even sustain that sort of civilization.
It's a theory. Right. I mean, there are lots of them. There's also the theory that the reason, like carnivores are generally more intelligent than herbivores, so there's an automatic ingrained like aggression.
Right. Ryan and I have had that conversation. Like it, just because of this, like you would hope that anyone that is able to achieve a certain level of intelligence and development would have to, by nature, be morally good so that they can get to that point, but that's just me being hopeful.
Exactly, Caleb. Like if we take even just societal exchange on our planet, it never goes well for the people with lower, like less technology.
Right.
We're just going to need that Dyson sphere. We'll figure it all out.
Yeah. I've been reading a lot of H.P. Lovecraft lately, and it's really cool how that he tackles the concept of like Earth. Of course, he wrote this stuff like 100 years ago. He tackles the concept of like malevolent societies existing on coming and going on Earth, which is really fascinating. Like, it's all about people discovering these lost civilizations and the remnants of them that existed on Earth, and some of them even came from, you know, came from other planets and mm-hmm. and lived here. It's I highly recommend Lovecraft. It's been some really cool reads. It's held up really well.
I watched episode one of Lovecraft Country, but I can't get Melody to watch it with me, so who knows if I'll pick up on it.
You guys don't have to share everything.
That's true, but I just feel like I just can't watch television shows by myself.
It is difficult. I agree. I feel weird about it. Like, watching movies by myself, I feel weird about it. And it's mainly because I have this stupid, like, that stupid ingrained thing of, like, I should be doing something productive.
Exactly. That's totally what it is.
And it's dumb. And I shouldn't think that way. And no, you should allow yourself to have entertainment, but...
Yeah. I watch a lot of television. I watch the majority of television in bed. And when Andy's watching it, we kind of settle on stuff to watch. Aside from that, I rarely will just sit and watch something.
Well, that, I guess we can go into the post show. That's it. You know who's retiring? Inferno, Trax, Trailbreaker, and Sideswipe.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to hear from them again. Although we will see Sideswipe in the movie, I think.
I don't remember.
I think he is outside the shuttle when Optimus Prime lands, and he's just standing there.
Right. I thought, or maybe that's
Hound is there too. Sunstreaker is driving that shuttle, and I think he's outside the shuttle as well.
Hey, maybe we'll look into that on our revisit.
Maybe so. Clicking through one of the TF Wiki discussion tabs, one of the contributors hypothesized something that was really interesting, that and they felt the whole spray paint disguise thing is one big animation error. And they weren't credited on TF Wiki, so shout out to whoever said this. But they believe that the Autobots were meant to be in vehicle modes before adopting the disguises. Like, they should have never been in the disguises were never meant for the robot modes. And their tip off for that is Windcharger, because his alt mode is so different from Wild Rider that he had to be a hologram instead of being painted. So in theory, anybody could have been impersonating Wild Rider, as you said earlier, but they needed Windcharger for his magnetic skills. The others are painted as they are because they share the extremely similar vehicle modes. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason to make their robot modes really look like those characters. And then they never transform into their robot modes during that scene at the end when they're actually hanging out with the Decepticons. So it's almost as if they couldn't do that because that would have been a tell.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Prime doesn't tell them to transform, only to roll out in that scene. So he believes that the script just meant for them to be in vehicle mode the whole time and never meant to necessarily be a robot mode disguise, and it was just a fuck up that they ever were.
Is this someone who has read that script, or is this just a theory?
Well, it's a TF Wiki contributor, so I assume they're fairly well versed, but if you have more information from the script that counteracts that, then I think that
it's open to that. That makes sense, because I could not find the original script. Just the one that we saw shot.
Oh, but also, sorry, one more thing. And when they were knocked, they were kind of KO'd by the real Menasor. Then they returned to their robot mode, and they just don't have a disguise at that point, which was another suggestion that they were never meant to look like Stunticons in robot mode.
That does make sense. I don't know if it matters.
It doesn't, but it's still an animation error, if it is.
Okay.
Indeed an animation error.
A significant animation error.
Yeah, they wasted a lot of time producing that. The only other additional thing, new voice actors, characters, you had Dr. Rickle, the trench coat bow tie science guy, was voiced by Corey Burton, and he was not named in the U.S. script. Dr. Rickle comes from the Japanese dub of the episode.
Have you guys ever tried Dr. Rickle?
Also, we talked about it. Wally Burr did replace Don Messick as Ratchet.
Yeah. So I would say maybe that should be a cocktail for one of our episodes. It's Ripple mixed with Dr. Pepper.
I wonder. That might not be too bad.
Have you ever had Ripple? I don't know.
I never have.
I don't even know if they still... I don't think they still make it.
Good enough for Red Fox. Good enough for me. Let's bring it back.
We'll have to find out. We'll have to find out.
I think I've looked it up, and you can buy it, but it's super expensive, and, like, because they don't make it anymore, so maybe I'd just throw some Mad Dog in there.
We've discussed this before, but I forget. What is Ripple?
It's a fortified wine.
Ugh. Yeah, I guess maybe it might taste okay in Dr. Pepper.
Ooh, but
it'd be a dark drink, that's for sure.
We should do a flaming Dr. Pepper sometime.
What about a flaming Dr. whatever?
Dr. Autopod?
Maybe we could mix some Ripple and champagne.
Champipple?
Call it Champipple.
I have Sanford and Son on DVD.
I've seen that episode. He was on the airplane.
In the real world.
In the real world, Masquerade aired December 16th, 1985. In the American Top 40, Lionel Richie's Say You, Say Me reigns supreme, so I picked a song from February of 1986. That's What Friends Are For by Dionne Warwick and Friends.
Keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me. For sure. That's what friends are for. For good times and bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore.
Sure, you guys probably, you must know this song.
Mm-hmm.
It was number one on the U.S. Hot 100 for 4 weeks in January and February of 1986, and the number one single for all of 1986.
Holy shit.
This song was written by Burt Bacharach and Carol Bayer Sager.
Monty Python reference.
I'm shocked you got that. Yeah. It is Monty Python and the Meaning of Life restaurant with conversations bit.
Waiter, this conversation isn't very, very good.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's like talk about philosophy. Yeah. This song was first recorded in 1982 by Rod Stewart for the soundtrack of the movie Night Shift, but this cover is much better known. It was recorded by Dionne Warwick, Elton John, Gladys Knight, and Stevie Wonder as a charity single for AIDS research and prevention. It was a huge success. The song won 2 Grammys, including Song of the Year, and raised $3 million for the cause. Here's a fun fact. It's a popular graduation song due to the meaningful message and is especially popular in junior colleges in Singapore.
Hmm.
I should mention that all of this is just lifted off Wikipedia. You can just assume, listener, that most of my stuff is lifted off Wikipedia or IMDb, and in the case of script deviations, a lot of it's from TFWiki or I actually shared on Patreon the script, the Google shared drive where I get a lot of the scripts, but...
That song is better at graduations than the "It's Something Unpredictable That in the End Was Right."
I hope you have the time of your life, which is also played in a lot of '90s, like after a series. And I'm thinking of specifically maybe Seinfeld. There was like a wrap up show. Yeah. All right, so that's the top 40. Number one at the box office, we've officially crossed into 1986 with our last two episodes coming out in January. So since Rocky IV won't let another movie out of the corner. Very clever.
Good job.
You. Let's do 1986's number one hit for 1 week in May of 1986. One of my favorites as a kid, Short Circuit. You guys seen this movie?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater. Yeah. I don't remember anything about it, though.
Johnny Five, I'm Alive.
That's right.
Other than that. And Fisher Stevens is in it.
I have.
I think that's culturally insensitive.
It is. For those of you unaware, one member of an experimental military robot team is struck by lightning and gains sentience and human intelligence. Being just born and craving input on the world, Number Five, as he names himself, breaks out of the facility and begins exploring.
Input.
That's need input, thing. Stephanie. He's very childlike. He encounters Stephanie Speck, played by Ally Sheedy, who takes him in. Nova Labs, who built the robot, go after it in a very aggressive way, including designers Steve Guttenberg and a somewhat unfortunate brown face performance by Fisher Stevens, playing an East Indian man. It is an exceedingly sweet movie, and it is admittedly heavy-handed, but lovely dialogue about what it means to be alive and what we humans do when we encounter someone or something different and unexpected. I did discover that it was meant to be much more mature and subtle, though. So in 2009, Austin Pendleton, who plays Gutenberg's boss in the film, stated, quote, "Some stuff was cut out of my part, and also the two leading roles were cast with really talented, attractive people, Ally Sheedy and Steve Guttenberg, who were not right for the parts. The script was just heartbreakingly beautiful to read, and now it's a nice, little slightly bland kids movie. Nothing wrong with it. These two people who were the leads were very good, very likable, easy to work with, and I have done some good work. They just weren't the people written in the script. And I said to John when it was about to open, why did you cast them? And he said, that was the studio insisted on, and it sort of ended the discussion. The film kind of works, but once again, it would have been a quite beautiful film.
Gotta love it when production gets involved.
Yeah.
Or I should say the suits
the
or whatever.
The executives.
Yeah, there you go.
It's hard to believe that, in retrospect, that Steve Guttenberg and Ally Sheedy would be executive level choices.
Well, Steve Guttenberg had just done he was coming off
Three Men and a Baby.
No, not yet. He had done Police Academy 2.
Okay. Yeah.
Ally Sheedy was Brat Pack.
But yeah. I don't think of her as a lead in it. I'm sure if I did the research, I'd just find out how wrong I am. I just don't think of her as a lead in anything other than this.
I can see what you're saying.
Why are you so angry about this?
I hate Ally Sheedy.
He's digging a knife
I'm
into his leg.
I'm on the record.
That aside, as you might expect, most of the money in the film was put into the robot, and it shows. Number 5 really does feel like a fully fleshed out alive character, and the design is amazing.
The eyebrows, mm-hmm.
Remember that? Am I wrong in seeing that there's like comparisons between Johnny 5 and Wally? They seem to look similar to me in my head without really
looking
at them.
Yeah, they kind of do. You're right. They both have tracks. They both have like the same kind of little clamper arms. They both have the eyebrows. Yeah. And like round, like binocular style eyes. Wow.
Yeah.
It's time for Pixar to get fucking sued.
I'm thinking.
This film grossed $40.7 million on a $15 million budget. And so a sequel was pretty obvious. One which I also like. Fisher Stevens did say that he was originally cast in the role, but it was not an East Indian man. And then there was another actor chosen instead, but it ended up reverting back to Fisher Stevens. And by that time, it had been turned into like this brown face role. He did an interview with Aziz Ansari talking about it.
And Aziz confronted him hardcore.
No, he was like, not upset. I mean, it was, I haven't listened to it, but from reading of what I did, it was like, it was pretty amicable. He's like, obviously Fisher Stevens was like, I would not do that today. But at the time, it wasn't the same world.
It's hard to believe Fisher Stevens and Michelle Pfeiffer were a thing for a period.
Weren't they
of time.
Married?
Maybe.
I don't know. I don't have those figures. Fun facts from this week in history. Boss of NYC Gambino crime family Paul Castellano and his bodyguard and captain Thomas Bellotti were shot dead in an unauthorized hit as they emerged from a limousine in Midtown Manhattan.
Was that the John Gotti hit?
It was. Three gunmen walked up to the car, pulled automatic weapons, and lit them up. The men then walked into rush hour traffic and disappeared. Castellano was 73 and on trial for racketeering. And Aaron is already. I had in here. You want to guess who did the hit? No, I was just going to ask, and you answered. It was John Gotti, John the Teflon Don Gotti, who was elected as the new Gambino boss 2 weeks later in a Manhattan basement meeting of capos. Gotti was convicted of 5 murders and a bunch of other shit in 1992 after Sammy the Bull Gravano turned state's evidence. In 2002, John Gotti died of throat cancer in the United States Medical Center for Federal Prisoners, MCFP, right here in the Queen City, Springfield, Missouri.
Yep.
And that facility is about a block from my house.
Our friend that went to Baltimore with us, Ben Bunch, he was living in Springfield at the time, and he was a barista at Mud House. And the Gotti family, while they were here in town to deal with the failing John Gotti, they came in there a lot and got coffee.
Wow.
And
that
so
must
Ben,
have been wild.
Yeah, Ben actually kind of made the acquaintance of a couple of them because, you know, they were in there a lot, apparently. One of them gave him a pretty high compliment. And he's like, you're a good barista. You should, come to Brooklyn and do coffee there or something random like that.
He could have been
like
in the really, mob. He could have been a guy.
What's interesting now is Ben does live in Brooklyn now, and he actually has reads and listens to a lot of stuff about the mafia. And what's odd is he had somebody do an estimate on preparing a fence in his backyard, called some sort of labor, and he realized like a few years later that person was
a semi-famous mafia person. He's, you know, crossed paths with people, but when they're doing their, they're just their normal, you know,
their
legitimate
cover job.
I think people high up don't do cover jobs. That's probably a low level dude. But
yeah. So anyway, yeah. So, but yeah, that Federal Medical Center is really interesting on who has been in there.
Yeah. You know, the largest and oldest federal prison hospital in the United States, and a lot of mobsters died in this facility. And probably the other most famous person is Robert Franklin Stroud, the Birdman of Alcatraz, who died in this federal prison in 1963.
The only other two people I can think of off the top of my head that have been there, I know there's been countless more, like Chuck Berry was in there for a short period of time when he was incarcerated back in the 50s. And Manuel Noriega's been in there at one point. Hmm. There you go.
Larry Flint was there. He was released, clearly.
Yeah. He's not still incarcerated. So basically, John Gotti is also blamed for kind of the collapse of organized crime in the mob in New York. It was kind of the beginning of the end.
I would shift that blame to Sammy the Bull.
He was just that's the mafia retirement plan, is to turn state's evidence. And that's the real world.
Rip deviations.
Donald F. Glut wrote this episode. He also penned 12 GE1 episodes. He wrote some of my favorites, SOS Dinobots, actually most, if not all, of the Dino-centric episodes, Heavy Metal War, and Autobot Spike. And we have one more gem in Season 3 for Mr. Glut, Call of the Primitives. I believe I've read this on the show before, but this quote from Mr. Glut is pretty telling about his attitude toward the show. "No one, not even the story editors, looked at these scripts very carefully. I seem to remember the show being on a really tight schedule. We had to crank these scripts out fast. I wrote some of them in a single day, first draft, and it went almost immediately to the storyboard artist after Bryce or an assistant gave him a rather cursory read. We were not trying to create art, just get them done fast and get paid. None of the writing in the series, in my opinion, was good or passionate, or sometimes my own, including the Autobot run, even adequate. But we got paid well for writing them fast. I was never a fan of any of the characters."
Jesus,
bang bong.
Did he give that quote from the Federal Medical Center? While
it is a part of an art. It's like something he wrote. Bryce, just to clear it up, is Bryce Malick, the story editor for Season 1 and 2. I just wanted to do that voice.
Fair.
I could only really find bits and pieces of the script online, but there's some info about it in general. I've never heard of anything like this with any other gestalt, but apparently in the script there are two deleted scenes where the individual stunticons are talking to each other while combined into Minasaur. And as if that weren't weird enough, the sixth personality, Minasaur himself, yells at them to all be quiet because the chatter is confusing him.
See, that would be interesting.
Would it?
Yeah.
I think it'd just be super confusing. Anyway. And I did wonder why not include Hound instead of Mirage, but the TF Wiki kind of explains it. The Autobots chosen to impersonate the Decepticons, like we said, are based on their alt modes. Given this, it's not infeasible to think that the plot in the episode may have originally called for the Autobots to simply have the alternate modes painted, like you said, Aaron. In Mirage's bio, there is something that does say, Mirage, he creates the image of Minasaur's face, a hologram, which is traditionally Hound's ability. But in Mirage's bio, it says he can project an illusion of different appearance for up to 6 minutes. But this is the only time it comes up in the show, and it leads me to wonder why not just make Hound one of the fake stunticons. But and they speculate the reason that they never had Mirage do that is because that's Hound's thing. But also in Hound's bio, his main ability is to project maps. Finally, a little bit of fun trivia. In the mid-90s, the Sci-Fi Channel aired a lot of G1 episodes, which I did not know. But to allow more advertising time, chunks of the originals were edited down, which is like, goddamn, it's only 22 minutes to start with. In this episode, some dialogue scenes were cut, including the grapple and inferno lines, resulting in them collectively uttering, "Time to add fire, probably hate myself in the morning."
What?
Was it at least delivered by the same character?
I think it's delivered I don't. I didn't. I haven't.
Well, you said
watched
Grapple
it.
And Inferno, so maybe half is Grapple, half is Inferno.
Yeah, because I think they just cut a chunk out. Like that's where, you know, Grapple lights the oil. And
Grapple
Inferno
adds fire. Inferno puts it out. Yeah. Yeah.
And what's the line again?
Time to add fire. Probably hate myself in the morning. Which so Grapple weird. Says time to add fire to the situation, and then Inferno's like, I'll probably hate myself in the morning, but and then goes and
for
puts
putting
it out.
Out the fire.
Yeah. That's it. That's the script deviations.
Well, how'd you feel about this one? How would you rate this scheme, gentlemen?
Well, I would say I'm going to rate the Autobot scheme because that's the more interesting one. Megatron's just building another cannon. It's half good and half really stupid. Like, they are really effective at collecting the Stunticons and imprisoning them. But the idea that they took the real parts in any form whatsoever to Megatron is ridiculous. I'll give it a 4.
Not well thought out.
Yeah, I really can't expound on that. The Decepticons scheme is just boring. And the Autobots one is... It works!
Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
I'll read for you all two bullets I pulled from TF Wiki. If any one episode served to cement Megatron's poor reputation among certain more snarky elements of the fandom, this is surely it. He comes up with a madcap scheme to build a useless weapon, doesn't listen to any of his troops' rather intelligent suggestions, insults his underlings for no reason, misses the obvious, toys with his enemies, pouts when he loses, and flies off with nothing in the end.
Wow.
The other bullet is Starscream saw through the whole charade in about 2 seconds.
Yeah. I will say that line that Megatron delivers, I don't have it verbatim, but he's basically like, suggestion noted and ignored.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that's repeated exactly by Beast Wars Megatron in one of the episodes.
Very influential.
Yes.
I'm the ghost of the iconic moment.
You know,
my iconic moment is Motor Master versus Optimus Prime.
What else are you gonna do
on the highway, Caleb? You got anything?
Soundwave flying away is a tape deck.
That's pretty funny.
I didn't remember it, but I will now.
Speaking of script deviations, for 1 second again. There is a speculation that maybe it's not clear in the script that he remains in robot mode and the line is just transform and retreat, but that's not in the final script, and they maybe just animate. They were confused and just animated Soundwave transforming into his vehicle mode.
They don't think for themselves, those animators.
Sometimes they do in a really strange way, as we'll see in the next episode.
Next time on the Autopod Decepticast. I don't know, and I don't want to know. I don't remember anything about this episode. I just have heard that it's legendary for being bad.
That's the rumor.
If you like what we do and like to prove it through money, you can do that at our Patreon. Or if you don't want to make any long-term commitments, you can buy merch from us, which we're going to have a lot of new merch up.
It's true. Pretty soon. Maybe we'll have some old merch for sale. No, like on sale price.
You buy full price.
Okay.
You can check it all at autopoddecepticast.com/store, patreon.com/apoddecast. We're going on break, but that doesn't mean you can't tell your friends to listen to us. There's plenty of old material. It's evergreen, sort of.
Yeah.
We have one more episode after this before we.
Yep, one more before the break.
Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, tune in, leave a review. 1 star, Mr. Joe Rogan.
Don't unsubscribe. We will be back.
You can find us on all the social medias, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at APODDCast. And never forget, hashtag never forget, the web presence at autopoddecepticast.com. Ryan, what are you going to put out there? It's been a while since I've asked.
I mean, there's going to be a video.
A GIF of Soundwave flying through the air.
Yeah.
A link to purchase man-sized cribs.
And crib-sized men.
Crib-sized men.
Thanks, yeah. Everybody. Bye.
Bye, bye, bye.
I'm going to hit stop and record.
effects of getting over it are.
Right. No, I don't want it.
Okay.
Knock on wood. None of us.
I just
yet.
Didn't know that about measles until I listened. There's a podcast called, oh God, I can't remember the name of it, but it's two
pandemic
PhD women who are talking about diseases, and every week they do a different disease, and they did measles, and I had no idea about that. This podcast will kill you, I think is what it's called.
That sounds like fun. Yeah.
Well, I guess we could get into it.
Sure.
Cells is the sponsor of Autopod Decepticast. Yes, 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 yes.